to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
I could sign the bill the way that it is today, but it wouldn't solve the problem. And that's the real issue. As I looked at the bill and examined it and have been discussing with legal scholars for many months on how to protect women's sports, this bill would only allow the NCAA to bully South Dakota. And it would actually prevent women from being able to participate in collegiate sports. So what I've done is I've asked the legislature through a style and reform.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but just for our viewers,
I'm so sorry. The bill.
Wait, can you just back up for one sec? For our viewers who haven't followed this as closely, how would this bill prevent women mm-hmm. from playing in South Dakota, if you would?
Because what it would do is it would put a law on the books that would allow the NCAA to take punitive action against our state. And we're a small state, Tucker. We've had to fight hard to get any tournaments to come to South Dakota. When they took punitive action against us, we would have to litigate. And legal scholars that I have been consulting with for many, many months say that I would very likely lose those litigation efforts.
That's South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem speaking recently on Fox News' Tucker Carlson tonight. She's explaining the reason she did not sign a bill forbidding males from participating in female sports. We're going to talk about this decision and some questions that Kristi Noem ought to answer. Joy Pullman joins us. She's managing editor of The Federalist, author of the book The Education Invasion, and a recent column titled 19 Questions for Kristi Noem about her failure to protect female sports. Joy, welcome back.
Hello.
Why is Republican South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem being criticized by many conservatives?
The short answer is because she refused to sign a bill protecting women's sports from male competition. And she has basically given deceptive and misleading arguments about her reasons for doing so.
What would the Fairness in Women's Sports Act have done?
What it basically would have done was basically define sports in the state of South Dakota from K-12 through college, so K through college, as either having to be male sports, female sports, or co-ed sports. It further would have provided that men, biological men, could not compete in sports that were designated female sports at any level, and that it enforced that provision by allowing any female who was part of a team or a sport that had a biological male competing against her, she would be able to enforce that provision in the law by suing the entities that broke the law.
So how has Noem attempted to explain her veto?
So the governor sent the bill back to the state legislature, and she included a note saying that she objected to certain portions of the bill. And basically, the changes that she want would gut the bill. It would eliminate any ability for there to be enforcement of the bill. That's the largest provision. But it would also take away any of the protections that were applied in the bill from the collegiate level of women's sports. So it wouldn't offer any protection to women at the college level for this bill. And so she explained this a couple of ways. But I think her primary argument has focused really on, first, she claimed that the NCAA would withdraw from South Dakota if it passed this bill. And second of all, she also claimed that signing the bill would open the state up to a large number of lawsuits, both potentially by parents of students who were denied the right to play in South Dakota, as well as it seems she was implying that there would be lawsuits from organizations like the NCAA, American Civil Liberties Union, all the usual cast of characters who oppose sexual sanity in American law.
Do we know how Noem came to her decision to veto this bill?
The short answer is no. And in fact, just 2 weeks ago, she publicly stated on Twitter that she was planning to sign the bill. She said that, you know, on International Women's Day, March 8th, she tweeted out that she was excited to support the bill, looking forward to signing it when it got to her desk. And then she went silent, and it was known among state lawmakers that she was getting lobbied very hard by the state's Chamber of Commerce, as well as a number of big business interests. Amazon is building a large fulfillment facility outside the Sioux Falls city of South Dakota. It's been reported that they also were pressuring Noem to reverse her decision. But we don't really know who said what or where or what her decision to reverse herself on this bill was based on. My colleagues at the Federalist have asked her office to provide. So she went on Tucker Carlson Fox News program on Monday and said that she was advised by legal scholars. Legal scholars was her term to veto the bill. But we still don't know who exactly these legal scholars are.
Who is Matt McCauley, and why is his possible involvement in Noem's decision concerning?
So Matt McCauley is described as a top power player in the state of South Dakota. He is a lawyer and a lobbyist, and he has been paid by Governor Noem. She's given him contracts. I looked up through the state's open records, South Dakota's open records. I found about $500,000 since the governor, Noem, has been in office. She has directed about that total of money to Matt McCauley through his law firm, Redstone. He has been a legal advisor to Noem before she became governor. So the two, you know, are reported in local media to have been very close and personally and financially, you know, have worked together for a very long time. So he has continued to be one of her top legal advisors, and he has a conflict of interest in this particular instance. He is also a lobbyist for a very large cross-the-country hospital chain called Sanford Health that owns a health complex in the Sioux Falls area that wants to host NCAA tournaments. And it also owns hospitals that have publicly stated in testimony before the South Dakota legislature that this Sanford Health, some of its doctors perform transgender, I don't like to call it medicine because it's really mutilation. So, but they give kids, and not just adults, although they do it on adults as well. But these hospitals that her top lobbyist lobbies for have a vested financial interest both in the NCAA thing as well as the transgender medicine thing. And it is, as I was about to finish my thought earlier, this hospital system admitted in testimony before the state legislature that they do perform transgender therapy, cross-sex hormones, as well as surgery, including on minors younger than the age of 16.
What do we know about Noem's chief of staff, Tony Van Usen?
Tony Van Usen is chief of staff for Governor Noem. He was a previous chief of staff to the previous governor, Dennis Dugard. Actually, that governor that this chief of staff also worked under infamously vetoed the bill I was just talking about that would have banned transgender sex change surgeries for children under the age of 16. And so this chief of staff, Mr. Van Usen, in between working for these governor administrations of Dugard and Noem, he was a partner in the same law firm for this lobbyist, Matt McCauley. So these two lobbyists through this well-connected law firm that lobbies for transgender medicine are working directly for Governor Noem, and they have a pretty lucrative financial relationship.
Noem claims that the NCAA has threatened lawsuits. Has Noem offered any evidence for this?
Not that to my knowledge to date she has it. And I have, in articles I have written about this issue, I have asked for the evidence we presented. And so far we just have her, what she seems to cite is that legal scholars have told this, and she insinuates that the NCAA might file a lawsuit or take some other kind of punitive action against South Dakota. But she hasn't provided any evidence of that claim. And I'm not sure if she actually, I would love to see it if she does, because I really do want to see honesty and transparency from the governor and some proof for her claims. But that seems to be possibly doubtful given that Idaho and Mississippi have passed similar laws to the one that the South Dakota governor just vetoed. And the NCAA did not sue those states. And neither was there the flurry of lawsuits that she claimed would be the case if South Dakota passed this bill. So I'm still waiting for some evidence for those claims here. The evidence that we do have seems to not back up her assertions.
Noem has claimed to be the victim of cancel culture. How do you respond to that?
So one of the things about this whole incident that is really confusing to me, and I think really makes the governor look bad, is her decision, rather than to engage on the substance, to say, here's who my legal scholars are. Here's the case law that, you know, they referred to saying that we'd have a bad situation for the state. Here's litigation that is similar to this that has played out poorly and cost other states X amount of dollars. So, you know, really engage with the arguments that are being presented. Instead, she has really pivoted to making rhetorical attacks on the people who are questioning her. And now, when that has included claiming that it's an attempt at conservative cancel culture. If your listeners are probably savvy enough that they've probably never heard of almost any instance of conservative cancel culture. The last one I can honestly remember was, you know, when all the establishment Republicans really tried and have continued to try to cancel Donald Trump, and that still hasn't really worked. And if you just check your common sense, you know, if you realize the people who have been successfully quote unquote canceled have all been attacked by people on the left over reasons that are left, what I call cultural Marxism, basically over not towing the line on the left's identity politics, its racial and its sexual ideology. And so that's obviously not what's happening here. And the other thing that's kind of a characteristic of cancel culture is that it really makes politics a private matter. So it attacks people personally, attacks children of people, and nobody's doing that in this case. What is happening here is a public disagreement and engagement that's attempt to be made on specific issues. You know, you took this action. What is your reasoning for doing that? And then you said this was your reasoning, but that doesn't square with these facts, so please explain that. You know, that's what you call reasoned debate. And entirely fair questions of a public figure in her public capacity. They have nothing to do, you know, with her private family life. They have nobody's outside her house waving signs and blowing bullhorns so she can't sleep. You know, this is none of that. So the fact that the governor is resorting to these sorts of smears and these just really unfounded claims about her opponents rather than saying, look, I can show chapter and verse. You know, here's who's talked with me. Here's what they're basing their reasoning on. Here's why I made this decision, so on and so forth. So the fact that she's resorting to this rhetorical attack, this media blitz rather than an engagement on substance really to me is a mark against her character. And it shows that, again, if she had substantive arguments, I don't know why she's not deploying them. The only reason I can think of is that, you know, she decided to take bad advice and try to cover for it. And now she's trying to cover even more and doing, you know, it's really impossible to apologize for what she's actually done. And so therefore, she has to shift the argument to personal attacks.
Joy Pullman is our guest, managing editor of The Federalist. We're talking about South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem's refusal to sign a bill forbidding males from participating in female sports. What are the questions should she be answering? We'll get some of those from Joy next. How should Lutherans respond to the assertion, your church is too Catholic? Find out in Pastor Will Whedon's column in the latest Issues Etc. Journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Joshua Pauling traces his path from big box evangelicalism and Reformed Calvinism to the treasures of historic Christianity found in the Lutheran Church, the free online Issues Etc. journal.
In 2020, the world was blindsided. At the Lutheran Church Extension Fund, we quickly refocused on how to best serve the church. Our COVID-19 response team took action, reaching out and listening to our borrowers. In response, we offered a number of financial remedies that allowed our borrowers time to stabilize. We also provided online streaming kits for churches, gift cards for food pantries, financial support for LCMS church workers, and much more. Life's not yet back to normal, and that's why we're still here for you. Visit lcef.org to learn more.
At Our Savior Lutheran Church in Winchester, Virginia, you will hear God's Word faithfully preached every Sunday. We invite you to join our growing family of believers this week and every week for Education Hour beginning at 9 a.m., followed by Divine Worship at 10 a.m. For more information, find us on the web at oursavior-lcms.org. That's oursavior-lcms.org.
Is your school or homeschool ready to take the next step in teaching students with learning challenges? We can help. The Simply Classical curriculum, voted number one for special learners, is available from Memoria Press for students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome. We provide everything you need for a full year. Use promo code LPR21 at simplyclassical.com. Simplyclassical.com.
your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The world is filled with darkness now. It's maybe darker than it's ever been before.
Issues Etc. guest Dr. Adam Kuntz.
The reason to come to Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne and to study to be a pastor is so that the light of Christ can shine that much more brightly. It's not a time for retreat. It's not a time for hiding. It's a time to hear the Lord's call and to come out and to serve Him, to shine His light into very dark places in people's souls, in people's lives, throughout our nation and throughout the world.
Learn more about studying for the vocation of pastor at ctsfw.edu or call 1-800-481-2155. Forming servants in Jesus Christ who teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. ctsfw.edu or 1-800-481-2155. Easter worship, after a time of somber worship in Lent, is meant to surprise us with the joy of the resurrection. Jesus rising from the dead was the last thing the devil expected and the last thing the disciples expected. The devil was surprised by his defeat, and the disciples and we are surprised by the grace, mercy, and love of God. A little bit from the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, A Simple Explanation of Easter. This booklet comes in packs of 20, and it's available from Concordia Publishing House. Just give them a call, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. A Simple Explanation of Easter, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March. We're talking with Joy Pullman of The Federalist about South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem's refusal to sign a bill forbidding males to participate in female sports. So, Joy, what other questions should Noem answer regarding her decision to veto this bill?
Well, I mean, I think there are a lot of questions, you know, as I've mentioned, about who advised her, and especially why did she change her mind? Why did she say that she was going to sign the bill and then, you know, reverse herself on that bill? And then I think there's questions, for example, about her proposed changes to the bill, as well as whether she consulted with people who had different legal opinions. You know, did she take legal advice from people who, you know, would say, okay, well, here's how we could address your, you know, stated concerns about lawsuits and provide, you know, the tightest bill possible, you know, to have the fewest lawsuits possible and the ones that were attacked on really be unfair ones that were willing, you know, that, and nonprofit legal organizations have said, you know, we would be willing to fight this for you if you're sued by organizations like the ACLU. So, you know, engaging on those sorts of critiques, as well as I think there's questions such as, you know, when governors have concerns about bills as they're moving through state legislatures, the usual process is for them to voice those concerns during the bill creation and voting and amendment process in the legislature. And apparently that hasn't happened here. You know, they don't send them back with a veto. They say while the bill is going forward, hey, look, this is what the bill looks right now. I have these concerns about it. Happy to sign it if you make my, you know, concerns. But the governor didn't do that. She waited until what she now considers a bad form of a bill, but said 2 weeks ago was a perfectly fine bill she wanted to sign. But now she has complaints, you know, that she claims were big enough to veto the entire bill. I mean, there's just a lot of kind of things that don't smell right about the positions that she's taking. But I would love if she could explain them. I don't think the critics, you know, are doing so out of a lack of charity. We're really looking for if there is a rational, reasonable explanation for her actions and a way to solve this problem in a way that does protect girls' sports, as the governor still continues to claim she wants to do. Everyone at least publicly states that that is their goal. So the discussion should be, well, how can we effectively get to that goal? The governor has said really that her actual plan is to create an online petition, and it's not clear why an online petition would be more effective at protecting girls' sports and upholding sexual sanity than an actual law that, you know, she could have signed, and as well that has been signed by several other states, being considered by 30 more. There's lots of questions out there. But I think, and another additional line of questioning that I'm interested in, I think is a really big one, is if her criticism is valid that, you know, well, for example, one of the things that the governor has brought up is the Supreme Court has basically written transgenderism into Title IX, federal law about sexual discrimination in employment. And so on that basis, she was alleging that, you know, she couldn't sign a bill to basically reaffirm human biology and male and female anymore. If that is the case, then is it really her position that there's not any possible thing to do? The Supreme Court has foreclosed all potential legislation across the country with its Bostock decision. If that's the case, that is a huge blow against Republicans' claims to voters that if you elect them, they will get good judges in who will not allow things like this to continue to happen. So there's a lot of questions that the governor really needs to answer and has been failing to do so, and instead arguing about the thing that doesn't exist called conservative cancel culture.
What do you make of Noam's launch of the Defend Title IX Now coalition?
That's what I was referring to when I said earlier, you know, an online position. So she said, I mean, this appears to be her public position, and I am trying to state it accurately according to her, what she said, but she said, on this issue, I cannot sign legislation that will protect children. Instead, what we need to do is have an internet petition to show the public that there is public support on this issue for affirming male and female sexuality. There have been a number of public polls that have already shown widespread national support for, you know, keeping sports sex specific, because obviously men and women are different, and, you know, men are unfair competitors, physical competitors to women. So, you know, that's already been done. And I know, you know, the numbers are much higher in her state of people who understand that basic reality. That's what her initiative is called. But it is not clear how a online petition is going to be more effective at securing, you know, legal rights and human biologies than a piece of signed legislation that has a right of action teeth in it for enforcement in her state.
Finally, with about 30 seconds here, Joy, Noah maintains that she does want to protect girls and women, especially in the realm of sports. How do you respond?
Well, the way to do that would be to sign this bill that I think it's legitimate to say there may need to be some technical fixes, but the technical fixes need to be actually narrow and not strip the ability of enforcement for this law and take away all the protections for college female athletes. So if there are actual technical fixes that maintain actual protection for female sports, again, it doesn't seem that anyone in this argument publicly opposes that. So it should be an easy thing, and that should be, you know, the outcome that swiftly happens. And if it's not, you will know it was not Governor Noam's intention for that to happen.
Joy Pullman is managing editor of The Federalist and author of the book The Education Invasion. She's also authored a recent column titled 19 Questions for Kristi Noem about her failure to protect female sports. You can read Joy's columns on the Talk On Demand archives page at issuesetc.org. Joy, thanks.
Thank you.
On the other side, a tragic story of a Drag Queen Story Hour supporter arrested for child pornography. Katie Faust of the children's rights organization Them Before Us will be our guest. You can help new Christians or those curious about the true Easter miracle with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, A Simple Explanation of Easter. These booklets are sold in packets of 20, making them perfect for outreach programs, new member classes, and in-church pews. Find out more about A Simple Explanation of Easter at issuesetc.org or by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, A Simple Explanation of Easter.
Deaconesses are women trained to share the gospel of Jesus Christ through works of mercy, spiritual care, and teaching of the Christian faith. The word deaconess means servant. Find out more on how you can serve in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod through the vocation of deaconess at lcms.org/deaconess. Working in faith, laboring in love, remaining steadfast in the hope of our Lord Jesus Christ. LCMS Deaconess Ministry, lcms.org/deaconess.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Concordia University Chicago is committed to keeping college affordable for all, and especially for LCMS Lutherans. We have scholarships available specifically for students who are LCMS members. This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia Chicago, asking you to encourage your student to check out Concordia Chicago at cuchicago.edu. And if you are interested in supporting these scholarships, please find us online at foundation@cuchicago.edu.
In the midst of life's struggles and trials, we are tempted to find comfort in something other than the Word of God, to find comfort in something other than where God has promised to be and what He has promised about us. Oftentimes, we find this comfort, knowingly or unknowingly, in superstitions, in the various superstitions that surround us. Read the March issue of the Lutheran Witness to find out more about superstitions and their place in the Christian life. We talk about superstition, scientism, and so much more. Visit cph.org/witness to order your copy today. The Lutheran Witness, helping you look at the world from a Lutheran perspective.